to episode one of Three Books,
an Ela Area Public Library podcast. I'm Kristen Weiser.
And I'm Becca Boland.
We are your librarians and hosts. Thanks for joining us.
Today, we have special guest, Becky Spratford. Welcome, Becky.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell us who you are.
Oh, well, you gave my name, Becky Spratford. We'll start with that.
We'll start there.
I am a Reader's Advisory Specialist. I am here in Illinois, and I specialize in training library workers on how to help all their patrons with the books they want to read for fun. But in that, I travel all over technically the world, virtually. I've been to Australia. I'm going to go on my second time now. But all over the country, in person and through webinars, and a lot here in Illinois, obviously, because it's where I'm centered out of. And I just go in and help entire staffs learn to be more friendly and how to help their patrons find what they need. I also have a critically acclaimed and very popular training blog, RA for All. And that's how you find me everywhere, is just type that into something. And I have It's Evil Twin, RA for All Horror, which we'll talk about today, because I'm also the author of the ALA's Reader's Advisory Guide to Horror. It's in its second edition. It's from 2012. But that website is a free update to the book. So it's really great that I can offer that. I do write reviews for Booklist and the brand new Indie Picks magazine, which we'll talk about, I hope. And I do content for Novelist. So, and you may have seen me on a screen near you. I also do some live events for Booklist. So, Right. Yeah.
Excellent. So now you know a little bit about Becky, and we are very excited to have her here for our October episode because Becky is known as the library world's horror maven, the leading library expert on all things horror. So with it being October, we wanted to talk to her and pick her brain a little bit about all of the great scary, spooky things that we can read or would love to read, because Kristen and I are not spooky readers.
We're afraid of everything.
So, Becky, this podcast is about three books. So you had a quote that you wanted to share with us about horror that might change our minds a little bit about how we feel about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking about being the library world's horror maven. So I'm a member of the Horror Writers Association also because of the book I wrote about horror, which I mentioned before, for librarians. And I work with them a lot to get librarians more involved. And one of the things they had me do last year is at their StokerCon 2017 in April, I was the guest of, this is the first ever librarian special guest of honor. I know, it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. And they had their inaugural Librarians Day, and I was a host. So one of the things I did was update my sort of introduction to horror presentation that I give to the librarians who came, because even though it was StokerCon, some of them only came because they were local to that area in California and didn't really know a lot about horror and wanted to learn more. And by the way, I would say to anybody out there who wants to learn more about any genre that going to a writer's convention of the Writers Association is a wonderful way to learn. So, and I had a great time.
Tip.
And in fact, I had so much fun that this coming year in 2018 in March in Providence, home of H.P. Lovecraft, I'm actually organizing the entire Librarian Day this year coming up. So if you live out on the East Coast, you're listening to this and can get to Providence at the beginning of March. We don't have the exact date yet for the Librarian Day, but we're going to be doing some really great stuff. So.
For future listeners, we are currently in 2017.
Yes. Yes, that would be March 2018.
Yeah, there you go.
This is a voice from the past.
I know. Never know. But when I update that presentation, one of the things I did not change is a quote I've ended my presentations with since 2010 when this quote was first done. Brian K. Vaughan is very well known to readers out there as the author of a lot of graphic novel series.
Saga is my favorite.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Why the Last Man is a good classic one, too. But Saga is great. And so when the Joe Hill graphic novel Lock and Key started coming out, Brian K. Vaughan obviously loved it, being a graphic novel person himself. And he gave an introduction to volume 3 of Lock and Key. And it's in the introduction, he said something that just hit me right at my gut, which is where horror hits you, in your gut. And I wanted to share it with everybody because even, I'm sure a lot of you out there, like Becca and Christine, don't really like horror. They don't think they do. But I'm going to maybe change some of your minds.
Okay.
And this quote is one way to do it because you like Christine.
We're going
to
call you at midnight when we're terrified.
Well, just instead take your book and put it in the freezer.
Okay.
And close it up.
In the freezer?
That's a common thing people say when a book scares them. I've had people tell me they buried their book in the backyard. Or they put the book in the freezer. And I say to them when they're super scared, I say, imagine that. A bunch of words on a page of things that don't exist got you so scared you had to put your book in the freezer. Good job, author.
Yeah.
And they're usually like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. Okay, now I'm less scared. You know, I sort of break that fourth wall for them.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, Brian K. Vaughan said this, and I think it's a great quote to use because he's not a horror person. He's a science fiction fantasy. He has scary elements. And in there he said, you know, I love this series, this Lock and Key. And one of the reasons is because horror is so important. And the quote is, readers love fantasy, but we need horror. Smart horror, truthful horror, horror that helps us make sense of a cruelly senseless world, which unfortunately I think still holds true today in 2017 as it did in 2010. There's always horrible things happening in the world. And there have been studies to show, and even Stephen King said this back in the 80s in his old book that you can find in any library, Dance Macabre, where he said, you know, in times that are very difficult, people turn to horror more. And, you know, we're right now, we're in the fall of 2017, yeah. And it was just out last week by the Stephen King movie, highest grossing horror film ever. Today, that news. So I think there's something to be said for this quote, you know, really holding true.
Is that the place that you approach horror and your love of horror from? Like when you read that quote, were you like, this is where I've been coming from all these years, but...
Interestingly, I think that's where patrons come from. For me, I read horror. I've always liked sort of dark, slightly askew stories in general. Growing up as a kid, like Shel Silverstein was my favorite, mm-hmm. you know, so not Dr. Seuss. So there's that. But also, for me, if you think about it, people read fiction for escape, right?
Yep.
So Kristen, I heard you like fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So that's a great example of escape. But horror is an escape for me. My life is fairly, thankfully, happy and sunny and good things are going. But, you know, it's neat to read into a sort of an illicit world, something that I don't see in my Chicago suburban life, writing about books as a living. And for me, it's where the way an author can take a story of something that's sort of regular and then add this supernatural element and twist and turn it in a way that I wasn't expecting is kind of cool for me.
Yeah. So,
awesome. And that dark side of,
yeah.
that I don't see.
Yeah.
I argue that that's why Law & Order Special Victims Unit has been on for so many years, because that is a twisted, dark show, and everybody watches it.
Well, the strange thing is, I don't like horror, but I do like true crime.
Good.
And I do like those kind of procedural cop shows, mm-hmm. And I love any sort of, like, Forensic Files or anything like that. And I think it's because... that's like, those are the good people that are solving this problem and making it right. And, you know, and I feel like by the time you hear about it, like true crime or whatever, it's like, there's a conclusion. This person has been put in jail or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. Whereas with horror, it's like, that can live in my brain forever. Like, who knows when that thing under the bed or in the closet or hiding in the attic is going to show up in my brain in the middle of the night or whatever.
Well, in a great horror book, the horror lives on after the last page turns. Christine's going to leave before we finish and go hide in the freezer. Let me also share something, too. There's a lot of appeal factors for horror, just like any genre that we can talk about that are pretty standard. And one of the biggest ones, well, the first one is it has to set that tone of anxiety from the first page and sort of keep it going, that dread. But the other big one that people don't realize is, and you kind of brought it up with why you like the darker books you do. And those are, by the way, and TV shows, horror. I call them not quite horror, horror-esque. They have that sort of dread and anxiety.
Yeah. Right.
But you talked about a lot about the characters, the good guys solving. In horror, the protagonists are always the good guys.
Yeah.
They are the ones, and often they're that coming of age, you know, reluctant hero, flawed hero, which I love in any story. I love character-driven stories. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like horror, I think, because it's all about that character battling those demons or bad personal and supernatural. And although in today's horror, we'll talk about it in a little bit, not everyone makes it to the end anymore like they used to. The joke used to be, you know, the protagonist is going to make it. Not so much anymore. But the good guys, you know, usually at least the ending is closed that they've, even if they don't make it, they've stopped the horror for now. It can still come back. Mm-hmm. But we have a resolved ending. But they are good guys who we root for. Which is why sometimes I happen to like psychological suspense with that flawed narrator and that creepy, you know, atmosphere and that twist at the end. Some horror readers do not, because the narrator can turn on you. And some of that is creeping into horror now. Okay. So we have to see. So it's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, now that we have our primer, our horror primer, tell us about your three books.
Sure. So I know you said the concept of this podcast is talk about three books. And of course, like anybody who loves books, it's hard to pick three. So what I decided to do was pick sort of a slightly recent favorite that I've had really good luck getting people who think they don't like horror to read that I also personally love. And then a book that's a little bit from the beginning of the century and a really current favorite. So I'm going to start with Josh Malerman and his book Bird Box. Have you guys heard of it?
I've heard of it. I've been too afraid to read it.
You might be too afraid to read it because here's the concept. Talk about dread. This is a sort of a post-apocalyptic story, but we never know what caused the apocalypse. Because if you are someone who opens your eyes and sees the thing that has come to Earth or the Force, you will become homicidal and kill everyone around you and then kill yourself. So everyone who has opened their eyes cannot tell us the story. Therefore, it's extremely claustrophobic in that you open your eyes, you die. And the story is told through the point of view of one protagonist, one main person, but on two different time frames. Yeah. And they're moving simultaneously. So that we begin on the day as this began, whatever this is, quote unquote, this. And she is looking in the mirror, and she's just found out she's pregnant from a one-night stand, and the world then falls apart. And then the next chapter is, we see it sort of slowly start to fall apart.
Okay.
The next chapter is 5 years in the future. This same woman is living in a house. There are bloodstains on the wall. Every window is boarded up. And she's raising these two children to never open their eyes. Yeah. So they are very good at being blind, even though they can see. And in that time frame, she is finally, 5 years later, making an escape to what she thinks is a place of safety.
Okay.
Down a river outside their house. And it takes place in the Detroit area in Michigan, which is where the author's from. Claustrophobic, highly anxiety-driven, dread, the idea of never opening your eyes.
Yeah.
It is completely an oral sensation, A-U-R-L, listening. You know, the story is filled with that. And it's no surprise that if you then go find out, Josh Malerman is an accomplished rock musician.
Yeah.
So relying on sound is pretty cool. His newer book, Black Mad Wheels, didn't do as well commercially. This book was everywhere at Bird Box. And I'm surprised because it is very different, but it's also oral. There's this rock band who has to go to the desert in Africa and discover this sound that is like a weapon. It's been weaponized.
Okay.
So again, it's about sound. So that's something if you are scared of seeing horror, there's nothing there. Because no one who lives can see it.
Yeah.
The only violence we have is when somebody in the house sees something and then tries to kill people.
Well, so, oh, please.
I'm going to jump in. That taps in. I feel like a lot of horror taps into some sort of primal fears that we have. And one thing as a child that you just instinctively know is that if you don't look, you're safe. That idea of you cover your head with your blankets. And so it's interesting that that's what he's using in that book.
There's the fear of the dark.
I was going to say the instinct to turn on the light.
Yeah.
Like, what is that actually going to do if there's something scary in your room and you turn on the light, then you just know it's there.
Or open the closet and look inside to see, but you can't. Your mom opens the closet and says, see, there's nothing here. In this book, you can't. It is so primal, as you said. So what I found with this book is, one, it's easy to talk about with people. It's written extremely well. It was up for and won many awards the year it came out. You can give it to just about anybody. With that alternating time frame, when it gets really intense, you pull back to a different time frame. And surprisingly, the 5 year later time frame is a lot calmer than the going through the apocalypse time frame.
So what makes that book horror and not sci-fi.
Sure, because we don't know.
So if we had a name for it, it might be a sci-fi book.
You know, it's interesting you say that because a lot of sci-fi is creeping into horror.
With the dystopian is just, I mean, it won't go away.
No, and any zombie plague is technically science fiction because there's a scientific description for why it happens.
Yeah.
But this is horror because it's supernatural. We don't know. But really, that supernatural element has to be there. I say speculative because it can be scientific. Because if you go back to Lovecraft, he used sort of aliens in a lot of his stories too.
Yeah.
But the key is some kind of speculative element, something that is not right now possible and true. But also that fear and that dread and that anxiety. That's what makes it different from science fiction and fantasy. The dread and the fear and the anxiety are present from the start, that oppressive atmosphere. That is there, and that is the overarching thing. So, Christine, if you can't take that, you might want to try true crime where the actions and the characters are involved in the drama.
Yeah.
It's still scary. But that's at the forefront, not this anxiety that is so thick you can literally cut it and put the book in the freezer to let it, so make it harder, you know.
All right, so.
You're going to get comments from people who do that. So many people put their books in the freezer.
I can't wait to hear about it. Or like all of the horror cope. Do you find that when you're presenting, you're really thinking about the way to say horror?
Yes. So you don't say horror? Yes.
Because I'm finding myself doing that and sounding like in my ear pretentious, but like I'm like, I definitely want you to know that I'm talking about horror.
So I'm from Jersey, so my original accent would have said horror, but I've lost that, Jersey accent. Hilarious. So it is hard. People don't know. And I'm like, no. Horror, scary books. They're like, Stephen King. Okay, got it. Yeah. No, I'm at the library talking about horrors.
I love that. All right, book two.
Oh, yes, book two. So the book, I think people are always asking me, of course, what is your favorite horror book? And so I do have to come up with one. Thank you for letting me have three. But what I do is I talk about a book that I think defines horror from this century, when we started the 21st century, and the trends and the things you can expect from it. Because we all know that Peter Straub, Stephen King, you know, Dracula, going way back, you know, we can talk about Frankenstein. But this is a book I love, and it's interesting because it's not necessarily a horror author, and he doesn't write a lot, but it's called The Ruins by Scott Smith. Don't go see the movie. The movie is terrible. It is not even at all like the book. The ending is completely different, which is one of the reasons I love this book.
Okay.
The setup for The Ruins, this is a great book, and I have done this. I gave it to a coworker when she went on vacation to Cancun for her honeymoon.
Oh.
Because it starts, you would not for Christine.
Honeymoon reads.
horror. It takes place, it begins on the beach in Cancun with two couples.
You're mean.
And she loved it. It was the greatest. She's like, because she loved scary books. We could talk a story about her hiding her books later if you want, after I tell this. So there's two couples are on the beach in Cancun on vacation, and they meet this Greek tourist who's talking to people, and his brother, this is never a good idea, went into the jungle to do like a Mayan ruins tour and never came back. And he's looking, Becca's making
stay
a face.
Out of the jungle.
Like, if this was video, she's like, you know, like at the movie theater, don't open that door.
Stay out of the jungle.
So, but often people do take these Mayan ruin tours. And I asked her ahead of time, she said they weren't going to do that. I'm like, okay, well, you're fucking read this. But she loved knowing that the horror was just in the woods behind her when she was on her honeymoon reading this. And so these two couples are like, well, let's go. Let's go on an adventure. Sure. It's a horror book. So they walk into the jungle. And this is all the first couple pages. They walk into the jungle, and they're going toward this hill, this huge mound. They think this looks interesting. And all the local Mayan people are like, in their language, are trying to stop them from going
up
the hill.
Listen to them.
But they can't really communicate, and they're kind of clueless, you know. Yeah. And part of the problem with this, good things about this book is, you kind of sometimes hate the people. Like, they're not the best people, but it's kind of, they're young people. They're like millennials going out there and doing it. Like, you know, it's all the stereotypes. Although this is before millennials, so I guess they're Gen Xers. But it's that idea that young people.
Millennials?
Yeah, they're young people. They don't know what they're doing. But so they go up this hill, and once they step foot on the hill, the Mayans run away. Because on this hill, we quickly learn there's a plant. A plant that likes to eat people.
Awesome.
And has a 100% success rate. Oh. And I will leave it there. The entire story. Talk about claustrophobia. Talk about isolated. They are on this hill. They cannot get off. They are being attacked, and they don't even realize by what for a little while.
Little jungle of horrors.
Yeah.
And it is intense, and it is all character studying these people. So, of course, their very worst features come out, but so do their very best features. And they're really, you know, they don't know this German, this Greek tourist very well, and they know each other, and it's very... So it's got all that survival stuff. It's got all that, but the dread and the anxiety. And there is gore in this one.
Okay.
So, but it is good.
Uh-huh.
Becca's not afraid. Becca's going to go in the freezer now. Everyone's
yeah,
dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're almost there. You're almost making me want to read horror. We'll see if we'll get there by the end.
This last one you might like. The last one is a brand new debut book that came out in June. So June of 2017. And I'm not the only one who is saying this. This book is amazing. It's called In the Valley of the Sun by Andy Davidson. And it is a debut novel. I was going to use notes, but I'm just going to talk about it.
Please do.
It is like if Cormac McCarthy wrote a horror novel.
Mm.
You know, that sort of wet. And I know people are like, well, he wrote The Road. The Road wasn't a horror novel. The Road was a post-apocalyptic story about how awful people are. It's a great book, but it's not. It's about a father and a son. It's a literary. But this is set in West Texas. And I would say if you wrote a horror novel, and for those of you listening who do like horror, I'll mention an author who it's like also, if you added Stephen Graham Jones, who is a writer from Colorado of Native American descent, who I think is the current great literary horror young writer. He teaches in Colorado. He was a guest of honor with me at StokerCon. He's also a very nice man. I'll let everyone know that. We commiserated about having freshman daughters when we were together. It's like a whole other world.
That's a horror novel.
That's its own thing. But she's a sophomore now, and it's much better. But he wrote, you might have heard of Mongrels last year, which was put out by William Morrow, and it was a literary werewolf tale. It's really about racism in America told through werewolves, and it was nominated for many awards too. So it's like if Cormac McCarthy and Stephen Graham Jones got together and wrote a book. Andy Davidson lives outside of Atlanta, but this is set in West Texas. And here's the story. We begin with Travis. He is not a good man. We know this because he wears a black hat when the book starts. I love that little detail. Like I was like, oh. We are in early 1980s West Texas. Travis is a Vietnam War vet, but the effects of the Vietnam War are still very raw, which I find interesting. We could talk about that now because the Ken Burns Vietnam War series is starting in the book and everyone's talking about it. And it's very raw still. And the economy is only slowly coming back. And some of these towns, these less populated towns, a lot of people went into the army. And so there's fewer men around. And we'll get to that in a moment. But Travis begins our book. Well, he's leaving a trailer from a one-night stand. And it's very clear that he actually killed the woman.
Oh!
Yeah, I know.
He's great.
Travis is actually not that bad a person. He's one of our protagonists. He is a murderer, but he is really a lot of PTSD. We actually learn his family story throughout the book, and it does not excuse it that he's a killer, but it does give us insight into why he's the way he is. Well, Travis is targeted by a very pale young woman in a roadside bar who, goes back to his trailer with him and attacks him and sucks a lot of his blood out. So now he's left sickly and cannot stand daylight. This is the most subtle vampire novel you will ever read. It is really a literary novel about these people and places. But he is a vampire. I mean, they never use the word. It's very clear that's what's happening.
Do they call
it
something else?
They don't really talk about it.
Oh.
But it's very clear that, you know, and she still kind of stays with him. And so he has this unquenchable hunger and can't have daylight. Well, he ends up parking his RV in a motel owned by this woman and her 11-year-old son. The motel's not doing so great. Her husband has died. He was a vet. He didn't die in the war, and you can learn about it by reading it. And they strike up this very unlikely friendship, the three of them. They give him free room and board if he helps them clean up the motel, and he spends some time with the son, he spends some time with the wife. It's not sexual in any way, but it's clear that they all kind of need each other. They're all very broken, and we see the son's point of view, and we see the woman's point of view, too. They are not perfect people, either. They are extremely flawed and make bad choices, which helps to counterbalance some of Travis. And then there's also a Texas Ranger who's looking for Travis. So the stories all converge And it's a slow burn of a novel with this dread and anxiety the entire time. And they all converge at like a county fair at the end with a very uniquely horror ending. But it is, it's a great story for people who want to experience the horror, but also have great characters and this historical appeal and wonderful writing.
Wow. All right. Maybe.
That one.
Maybe.
In the Valley of the Sun.
What do you think? Do you do vampires?
It's, well, I don't do vampires, and I liked
Twilight.
It.
Twilight.
You read Twilight.
Okay, this is not supposed to be vampire.
They sound
not
exactly the same.
Then they said Travis. Yeah.
It's, that's the same.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you're reading now.
Oh, that's always fun. So right now, I sort of have a category of what I'm reading. I am reading a lot of independently published horror. So basically non-Big Five horror, which is interesting because the Big Five doesn't put out a lot of horror, which is a whole other thing that I won't talk about because I get angry about it. But the reason I'm doing that is the brand new magazine Indie Picks, which I know this library has subscribed to.
We have.
And Rebecca Vanook, formerly of Booklist, is the editor-in-chief. And she was my editor at Booklist. And I, for those of you out there who read my reviews, I'm still reviewing for Booklist. But I am the horror columnist. So every month, starting in on the November 1st issue, November 1st, 2017, I am going to pick three books from independently published presses that I'm going to review. And the whole point is to get a review source. These are all librarians reviewing them. It's a way for readers, but also libraries, to see what books they're missing.
Yeah.
And we're even including self-published, you know, as, and the ways for libraries to add these, because a lot of libraries need a review. That's in their collection development policy. I know I ran a collection for 15 years that I needed a review to prove the book was good. A 50 Shades of Grey, I couldn't buy because it only had bad reviews at first. Then when it became a bestseller, I could, you know, because that was in my collection review policy. These books aren't going to become bestsellers, but they're fantastic. And I don't see why a library can't add three horror books a month, you know, or even one out of the three that I review. There's already a sample review, if you're listening to this right away before the issue comes out, there's already a sample three-book column by me on the Indie Picks magazine website that you can read. But I'm reading a lot of independent horror because what's great is we get at least five books a month to choose from, and then we have to choose three. I'm really excited about it. And there'll be columns for all the different types of books that you would find at the library, you could find at the library. So that'll be great. But specifically, a couple books I'm reading, another book I'm reading for work is Lab Girl by Hope Jaron, which is a nonfiction story. And it is a geobiologist who spent her life studying trees, flowers, seeds, and soil. And it's sort of her treatise on plant life, but it's also about her life. It's a memoir about being obsessed with science for her whole life. And this is a book I've wanted to read for a while, but the reason I'm reading it right now is in November, on November 14th, 2017, at 6:30 p.m. at the Chicago Botanic Garden, I'm leading a discussion of this for their One Book, One Garden program, and it'll be at the Lenhart Library. You can find it in the show notes and on their website, and anybody can go. And it's the library's open after hours. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to pay to get in. I did one for them in the, I think it was in March, and we're doing this again because it was a great success. So I'm super excited to do that. What I love about leading these discussions with them at the garden, I'm the not botanical expert, and all these people who come are like super into plants. I learned so much from them. So for me, it's fun because I talk about the literary elements of the book, and then they want to talk about the plants.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fun. And then for fun, because I do read for fun, I am reading See What I Have Done by Sarah Schmidt, who's an Australian librarian. Mm-hmm. And I learned about this book at ALA. It was being buzzed by the publishers. And See What I Have Done is one of those, it is kind of horror, because it's based on the Lizzie Borden murders.
Yeah, you know? This one I was actually really excited about.
And it tells the story, you know, instead of the true crime version, it's from Lizzie's point of view and also from others' point of views in the story. I am about to start this. My library hold came in, and I'm really excited to try it. The Lizzie Borden murders are obviously something that lots of people have been interested in for
years.
There's
been a lot of Lizzie Borden books that have come out in the last year or two. I know there's at least one YA whose name totally escapes
yes,
me.
Yes, there is a YA one. It had a great cover, too.
Yes,
I remember it.
Yes.
Look it up and put it in the show notes.
I will put it in the show notes, 100%.
That's why we have show notes.
But yeah, no, this is one that definitely caught my attention. Does this count if I read that one? Is that me reading horror?
No. It's more gothic. But gothic, again, is horror-esque. Mm-hmm. And I think that gothic is something that a lot of people read. I bet you would like gothic, Christine.
I do like a little, like that element of, you know, there's that sort of overhanging. It's not quite horror, but there is sort of a doom feel to it. Like, you just know this is going in a direction that's maybe not awesome for everybody in the book.
And then you want a gnome to show up.
Yeah.
Or a dragon. A dragon.
A dragon. She's a dragon reader. Sorry. I know those. Yeah. So.
Now you know everything you need to know about Kristen.
Yes.
She's a dragon person. No, I'm just kidding.
Done.
When someone isn't handing you a book or assigning you a book or... are there any other books left? How do you find books?
You know, what I love about what I do is, since I'm so public in my job of helping people find books to read, I have great groups of friends, other librarians, and people I've met all over the country who are like, have you read this? Have you read this? So what I love is when somebody tries to stump me or send me a book that I haven't read. So recently, my good friend Megan Rosel, who's at the Morton Grove Public Library here in Illinois, said to me that she just finished a book by a Chicago author called The Grip of It by Jack Jemick. And it's J-A-C, and it's a female who wrote it. I didn't really know about her. She teaches writing in Chicago, according to her biography. But this is a horror book that's getting a lot of talk about, and it's about a haunted house in the Chicago suburbs.
This one's really close to home.
So I'm going to try this one soon because I am. So that's how I find out about books, is people tell me. Often I've heard of it, but you're right. Often I don't have time to read the books I want to read. So I have to make time to read the books I want to read.
Yeah. I think that's a common librarian angst.
Finding that balance between reading books to recommend to patrons, reading books for book lists, reading books to book talk, reading books for book discussions, and then also just reading to make sure that you still love reading and it's not just an assignment. Because sometimes, it's really hard to get through a book when you're like, I really wanted to read this, and then it was the book that we selected for book club, and now I'm washing dishes because somebody told me I had to read this book.
Yeah, it's that balance, and it's funny because it's something I think patrons don't understand about us. So if there's readers out there listening, they really do think we sit around and read all day. And although I am reading a lot, it's not for me.
Right.
It's for everyone else. And I take my job as the Library World's Horror Maven very seriously in that I know that, and studies have done this, Novelist and Library Journal did a study on the genres that librarians are most scared of, quote unquote, and horror was in the top four.
Yeah.
I know that librarians as a group don't, either they love horror or they're totally scared of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I found is that I have to really push books and explain to people why they should at least tell patrons to read them. And I take that job very seriously. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to provide as much access to titles as I possibly can.
Okay, somehow we're going to squeeze one more book into this because I'm going to ask you a surprise question, which is if there was one book that you were going to give to people, librarian or otherwise, that say that they're not horror readers, that falls in the horror genre, what would that like gateway book be?
And I often do Bird Box, but you're going to make me do a different one.
Well, you can say Bird Box if that's
often
the one.
My, that's often the gateway book I use right now. But I do have to say, and this is bring up another book, actually. I say to them, before they're like, well, I don't read horror, I want to try something. And I say, is that really true? Have you really never read horror? And there's a brand new book that came out this week when we're recording this called Paperbacks from Hell by Grady Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And I was actually a big pusher of that book back in June. I was on a panel at ALA talking about the books I'm most excited about that are coming out. And that was one of the books I talked about. And what I love about what people are saying about this book, Paperbacks from Hell, is it's a history of all those paperback books from the 70s and 80s that were these great horror books that everybody read. People who are voracious readers read horror. They read Stephen King and say, well, I read Stephen King when I was younger, but I don't like horror. This book is a great book for everybody to take a look at, and you really need to hold it because not ebook version because the pictures in it are amazing.
Is it coffee table e?
No, it's slightly bigger than normal, but it's not coffee table e. Okay. It's definitely, you know, smaller than that. And I have a copy at home and I just, I love it. But you can read about all these books and things. So for example, did you read V.C. Andrews?
Nope.
Oh, but did you?
No.
Really? I'm surprised because a lot of library workers have.
Yeah. Well,
those are like gothic, romance, twisted, mm-hmm. but those are in there,
yeah.
you know, and all these books that people have heard of and read. And so, but Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, and it sort of using, I'm going to start using that book as a springboard to talking to people who are new to horror, mm-hmm. to talk to them about it, and remind them that you probably encountered these at some point. So when I'm giving somebody something new, I first make sure they've never read a horror book, and usually it's Stephen King. Well, what did you like about Stephen King when you were younger? And then they start talking, and so I try to match them with a book they would like. Then the other thing I say to them is, well, do you watch any scary TV shows or any scary movies? And then that leads me to something, but you'd be surprised, shows like American Horror Story have great, Becca's shaking her, great ratings, yeah. and also there's the TV show The Exorcist is yeah. really popular right now, it's coming back in its second season.
Ooh, and Stranger Things.
And Stranger Things has brought back a lot of it,
yeah.
and I think there's so much with Stranger Things, because that's like classic Stephen King 1980s yeah. books. But I have to say, truly, truly, if you're afraid of horror, and you don't really, you want an entry, a couple books I do give out, besides Bird Box, are The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson.
I actually love that book.
And why do you love it?
I like it because of the psychological yeah. aspect. It's in your head, you're not seeing anything, and especially when you think about like the film translations of those books. The earlier version, it's knocking on a wall. You never see anything, so it doesn't date itself. And I think that's why I like it. There's no like blood, guts, whatever. But it's all in her head, and you see her slowly unravel in a way that isn't like grossing me out.
It's all in the head in that book, but it's amazing because the dread is there, like yeah. something terrible is happening.
And the house is a character, for sure, which is interesting.
So, see, you have read horror.
Yep.
and then
I just reread that one over and over again. like, okay, did the horror thing.
And that is, and again, I think you made a great point, too. It's on the outskirts of horror. Mm-hmm. So it's a book I give, because I think Bird Box is firmly inside the circle yeah. around horror, but on the edge. The Haunting of Hill House is like right on the yeah. circle, if you drew a yeah. diagram. And then another book that's just on the circle too, and is it from another genre, the other book I give people is Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury. Yeah. And Stranger Things is why you made me think of that too, is that it's a great read-alike for Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So Ray Bradbury, mostly known for like Fahrenheit 451 or The Martian Chronicles, science fiction. And this is the story of some teens, and it's a great book for teens to adults, who go to a traveling carnival. Have you read it?
I started it.
It's
and
a
then
little
I was
scarier.
Like, this is getting worse. this is not going to end well. They're in mirror rooms.
Yes. and it really plays off that whole carnival yes. clown, yes. like bad yes. things happening.
It wasn't the follow-up to the night circus that I wanted.
no, it is definitely not. I would say, actually, if you like Stranger Things, it's a little bit darker and more twisted,
yeah.
but still with those teens and that sort of them encountering this world that's slightly askew.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of my real gateway books that I okay. give people.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry to spring a surprise.
Oh, I have to be able to do it. I am a horror maven, right?
And that's also the nature of Reader's Advisory book suggestions.
Yes.
A surprise.
Can you name a horror book with a green cover and I don't remember the author? Uh-huh. I'm just kidding.
No, I know. It cracks from hell. Let's
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Shirley Jackson's book is green. there at least one version.
There's
of it.
So many versions of that book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, awesome. You know, I'm sweating a little bit from hearing about these books, but I think I'll be okay.
If you have nightmares, you can call me and
yeah,
I'll talk
yeah,
you through.
We'll be okay. I'll find a freezer. and so thank you for sharing your expertise with us. We just have one very generic question because we're librarians. We love the space that we're in. And just sort of whether readers like horror or not or want to know about horror or not, we would like to know about your first book you remember checking out from the library, if you can remember that, or an experience. early experiences of the library.
It's like the library origin story, right?
Right.
Yes. So it's interesting because I don't think I checked out so many books. Like I did this with my kids too. Mm-hmm. You know, we would go to the library and fill up the bag. So I can't really know what the first book I remember checking out of the library, but I do really remember my first experiences at my library. So I grew up in New Jersey, as I mentioned, in Flemington, New Jersey. So shout out to the Hunterdon County Public Library. And then also the downtown branch of the Hunterdon County Library in Flemington. So as a young kid, I actually went to the big county library. It's closer to my house. And I still, in my mind, can clearly picture the children's room and like the little, they had like a little thing you, like a little fort you could go in and reading books there. And my mom leading me there, you know, as like a 10-year-old for hours to get to just read books. And I remember getting older and venturing upstairs to get to the adult books. And then as a teen, my middle school was in downtown Flemington, famous for where the Lindbergh baby trial was at the courthouse. Ooh. I know, so creepy right there.
Yeah.
It was the county seat, so that's where it was. So I'd walk down the hill right past that courthouse to the public library, which was conveniently next to my orthodontist. So that was always good. So when I had an appointment, I would go. And then I would hang out in the public library. And this is so funny because it'd be every Wednesday before I had to go to Hebrew school at the other end of town. And I would stay there, such a middle school thing. So I would stay there for hours, like killing time, but having fun. I wasn't doing homework. I was just looking at books and just going through the stacks. And I can clearly remember just walking and trying to find books that I didn't know about, not using the card catalog, just walking around. And it's so funny because I spent all those wonderful hours at the library and I was using it like, you know, somebody who loves it, like going through it and looking at displays and instinctually sort of being a librarian, and never thought to be a librarian myself until in college, my advisor said to me after I had, she was talking to me like, well, what do you think you want to do after college? I had no idea. I went to a liberal arts college. We didn't have an idea. But I had written a thesis, an undergraduate thesis, as part of my interdisciplinary major with a different advisor. And so she was asking me, how was that experience? And I was telling her, and she said, it sounds like you loved the research part of this. Like, have you ever thought of being a librarian? And I was like, I've actually never thought of being a librarian, yet I've spent hours of my life in the library. And I did love doing the research for this thesis, which we already brought him up, but it was on the films of Ken Burns, which is kind of funny that I brought him up earlier. And so I went back to my thesis advisor as we were finishing up. And this is a man who loves libraries. He is the world expert on the history of the Olympics, and he thanks librarians in all of his books. And when he heard that the other advisor had said that, he went, yeah, you're too nice and friendly to be a librarian. And I went, challenge. And that cemented it for me. I'm like, I'm going to look into this. And I knew I was moving to Chicago, and I was getting a job. Actually, I got a job at a law library to make sure I didn't want to be a lawyer and to see if I like libraries. But I was like, this is my challenge. I'm going to be the nice, friendly, helpful librarian and change everyone's view of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done. I mean, I literally go out to libraries to get them to be more friendly and welcoming to people.
Yeah. I think there's a very, like, narrow view of what librarians are and what we do. And I think a lot of times what is represented to the public is like a cataloging librarian or like a really esoteric research librarian. And a lot of what we do is like actually really fun and random. Like we have like a million jobs rolled up into one. And so I think that's great that was like your challenge accepted.
And you know, like for those of you who aren't librarians out there, like the number one librarian joke after you get your degree and you're working your first desk and the first thing you do almost always is unjam paper from the cup.
Yeah.
I say things they teach you in library school because they don't. And I really, when I taught at Dominican University for many years, I thought of adding that as a joke into the curriculum, but I taught the Reader's Advisory course and I just couldn't fit it in.
Yeah.
But I always told them as they were leaving, now remember everything you learned from me and how to unjam a copier.
Yes.
That's the first thing you're going to do at work.
Locate the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Point to the bathroom.
Yes. That will be your second question.
Although libraries have been very good at listening to librarians, library architects, and putting the bathrooms as soon as you walk in libraries.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. Yep. There they are. All right. Well, thank you, Becky. Is there anything else we should know about you?
Yeah, sure. Just type Ari Farrall into Google and you'll find me. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ari Farrall. It's R-A, then the word F-O-R-A-L-L. And if you just put that in, you'll find me in a lot of different places. Twitter's the best place to interact with me. And I post on the regular RA for All a blog every weekday, and then the horror one sporadically. But in October, I do 31 days of horror. It almost kills me every year because I'm doing two blogs for the month, plus a lot of people want me for other things, but I love doing it, and I do solicit a lot of guest posts. In fact, Becca is going to be doing a guest post for me. I have a lot of authors lined up who, and you can go back and look at old 31 Days of Horror. I've done it for many years, and I have an archive of it, but you can just check October any on the list of months. And I get a lot of authors to come on, and I ask them to tell library workers why they love horror.
Yeah.
And so they tell us about their favorite book and their favorite experience. And I have a lot of wonderful stuff up there that you can read by authors. It's fun.
That's a great resource, especially for all of us librarians who feel like we're not horror readers. Yet it's that time of the year when we're doing horror displays and all of that other good stuff. So to put out stuff that maybe people don't have a familiarity with. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else that people need to know about you or your work?
I mean, you can go on the blog and do the contact me and find out ways I can come to your library and help your staff. I do virtual and in person, and I just love helping people. So I have all my contact information. If you just click on the logo of RA for All, and it says click here to learn all about me. So
great. And we'll have all of Becky's stuff linked in our show notes as well, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You're not into Google.
Yeah. And just to recap the books that we talked about today, Bird Box and Black Mad Wheel by Josh Malerman, The Ruins by Scott Smith, In the Valley of the Sun by Andy Davidson, his debut novel, Lab Girl by Hope Jaron, See What I Have Done by Sarah Smith, and The Grip of It by Jack Jem. How do you pronounce that?
I have no idea. That's the problem with being a reader. You don't know how to pronounce anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know that Becky discussed a lot of other books too, so we'll make sure those are linked in the show notes as well.
Yep. And so we'll see you guys again in November when we'll celebrate Booksgiving. We'll have a great list of ideas that books that will make great gifts to give or to receive for the holidays. We're hoping to cover all ages. We're going to get some of our book experts to contribute to that. And so we'll see you then. You guys have been listening to Three Books, an Ela Area Public Library podcast.
Produced by Celicia Applegate and engineered by us.
Our theme music is provided by Lache Swing.
Write to us at threebookspodcast@gmail.com. That's three spelled out, T-H-R-E-E, bookspodcast@gmail.com. And tell us what you're reading.
And stop by Ela Library to request a copy of the books you heard about today. You can find the titles we've discussed as well as links to the library's catalog at eapl.org/threebooks.
I'm Becca Boland.
And I'm Kristen Weiser. And we're with
Becky Spradford.
See you later.